Emmy Award-winning comedian John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that will stream live on Netflix during the Netflix Is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A. debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time only on Netflix. Hello, Los Angeles. All right, I can muscle you into being enthusiastic. I've done it before. I'll do it again. Welcome to Love It or Leave It. We're in a new theater today, so if anyone at home hears more booze than usual, it's not that we've gotten less funny. It's that the audience is just much closer to the mics. Paula Poundstone is here, and she's agreed to come out here and assess how the monologue is going. While the monologue is going, Hari Kondabolu is back with some tiny, tiny complaints. And James III will join us to savor the best of the Bad Boys. Before we get started, I'd like to invite my first guest out here to join me for the monologue and either shower me with praise or roast me beyond recognition. You know her, you love her. It's the incredible Paula Poundstone. Hi, Paula.
Hey,
Paula Poundstone.
Okay, I live in Santa Monica, California, and it'll be so good to get back to California.
All right.
We've done the show before in another location, right? Is this your
That's
first
right.
time in this?
We've never been to the Lyric before. It's our first time here.
Are there people here that have been to the typewriter place? So we've brought 3 people. That's your base. That's your core.
Yeah, and that's where we build from.
Yeah, you don't want to piss them off. You want to say and do whatever your base, your core, enjoys. And where do you all live?
West Hollywood.
West Hollywood. Nowhere fucking near where we are, right? Yeah, so what did you do? Do you have like a Winnebago? Did you head out? Did you stay the night nearby last night?
We're not in Bakersfield.
No, we are a long goddamn way. I left 2 days ago. I left.
If the wagons, who are the people that ate the people in the wagons?
Oh, the
Donner Party.
If the Donner Party
were here, they would have said, "We're so close. Let's just wait. I know we're hungry, but let's keep going." That's how close we are to the ocean.
To the ocean?
Yeah, that's where you live, the ocean. And yeah. I'm saying we're very close to the ocean.
We are not
by
close
any standard,
to the ocean.
By any
no.
standard in America, we are close to the ocean.
Absolutely
for
not.
For most people, this is close to the ocean.
No, it's a really long drive. How long was it for you to get here?
About an hour.
But that's the way Betsy drives.
Betsy's so like, you know your base? You know
yeah,
the
I know
names?
Betsy. Betsy, here's the thing. I know Betsy. In fact, I was, I believe, on an electric scooter, and I passed Betsy
with
on
a helmet? Did you have a helmet?
I happened to not have a helmet.
Oh, you know what? This is driving me crazy. You got to wear a helmet.
Okay, you know what? Next time I ride one of those scooters 5 years ago, I'm going to wear a helmet.
Yeah.
But I went by Betsy, and Betsy said, John, and I just waved, and I did not stop.
And you knew her from being part of your base?
Yeah.
Did you guys meet because you come to his shows?
Been coming, five years.
5 years, which
every
is weird.
Every venue.
Because he's been doing the show for about 2. So what do you, which was better, the first 3 years or the last 2, would you say?
Don't put her on the spot. They're all great.
Yeah.
God damn it, Paula.
No.
Let's get into it. What a week. Have you ever wanted to cede medical decisions about your body to a bunch of frontier maniacs writing laws before genetics or viruses were discovered? Boy, do Arizona Republicans have a treat for you. The Arizona Supreme Court on Tuesday upheld a near-total abortion ban from 1864 in a ruling that said that the 160-year-old law is now enforceable. So saddle up, women folk. We're going down the pass to get a potion from a little trading post called CVS or the border with New Mexico.
That's good. That's...
No, I... You know you've got a good joke on your hands when Paula Poundstone isn't sure it's over before she compliments it.
No, I was just thinking about the future for Arizona.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's going to be great. You know, their new license plate says, "Our women are hot."
Hmm.
Yeah, that one's over. That was it.
The law, which was on the books before Arizona became a state and before women had the right to vote, outlaws abortion from the moment of conception, except when necessary to save the woman's life, and it includes no exceptions for rape or incest. Rape and incest didn't really exist as concepts at the time. When this law was written, both were simply called sex frontier style. Yeah, that's what we felt before. And we discussed cutting it, and we decided not to.
Yeah.
It originally had said sex Arizona style, and then we decided that that was more of a Florida joke, and then we decided even that was too much, so we made it frontier style.
So you had meetings about that?
Arizona had already had a perfectly cruel 15...
You know how you would do, like, you know how you would hand a paper in school, and the teacher would say, well, how much time did you spend on this?
Listen,
so the whole frontier sex thing.
I want you to know that there is a rigorous, multi-hour long meeting where we go line by line through everything that you're hearing right now. I know I make it look...
Oh, you do?
Easy.
Oh, my God, do you make it look easy.
And thrown away.
No, everybody in this room right now thinks, well, I could fucking do that.
This is what I wanted. This is good. Arizona, all right, this is honestly being...
There are dominatrix, what do they call them, dens? What are they? Don't act like you never heard of this.
Dungeons.
Thing. Oh, wait, I didn't even know there was a section over there. How are you? Yeah, there are dominatrix...
What about them?
Dungeons in downtown L.A. that you could... Because when you said this was
I agree. Your point being that being mocked and criticized is my kink.
Yeah.
But only on a stage while being also lauded.
Oh,
you know?
I see. Okay.
I need a little bit of both. Arizona had a perfectly cruel 15-week ban that lawmakers enacted in 2022, but they went ahead and reached back 160 years to enforce something even more fucked. You didn't need this abortion ban, Arizona. You had abortion banned at home. Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs had this to say about the ruling.
It is a dark day in Arizona. Let me be clear. Arizona's 2022 abortion ban is extreme and hurts women. And the near total Civil War era ban that continues to hang over our heads only serves to create more chaos for women and doctors in our state.
Continued Hobbs, and God help us if they dig up that 1799 law that says you can drown any woman in a well for making eye contact with a man she is not married to or ignoring an eligible man's attempt to make eye contact. Oh God, I shouldn't even have mentioned that one. Forget I said anything. Arizona's Democratic Attorney General Chris Mays said in a statement that she would not enforce the ban, which she called unconscionable, writing, "Today's decision to reimpose a law from a time when Arizona wasn't a state, the Civil War was raging, and women couldn't even vote will go down in history as a stain on our state." Chris Mays has single-handedly changed my assumptions about women named Chris spelled with a K. Whatever Chris Jenner did to my brain, Chris Mays has reversed it in a fraction of the time. Continued Mays, "Let me be completely clear. As long as I am Attorney General, no woman or doctor will be prosecuted under this draconian law." And that's really what you want these things to hinge on. One elected official holding their finger in the dike like the little Dutch boy. Paula, have you ever held your finger in the dike like the little Dutch boy?
No.
Anyway, if you're ever on the fence about whether or not to bother voting, Mays won her election by just 280 votes out of more than 2.5 million votes cast. That's 0.01%. Also, if you're on the fence about voting, how did you end up here listening to this? Did you think I was on SNL in the 90s and had somehow become younger and hotter, but equally Jewish? Meanwhile, MAGA Senate candidate Carrie Lake arranged her face into her best human impression and said in a statement, "I oppose today's ruling and I am calling on Katie Hobbs and the state legislature to come up with an immediate common sense solution that Arizonans can support." But Lake praised the very same near total ban in 2022 when she said this.
"I'm incredibly thrilled that we are going to have a great law that's already on the books. So it will prohibit abortion in Arizona, and I think we're going to be paving the way and setting course for other states to follow."
But you have to understand, Paula, this was from all the way back in 2022. It was a completely different time. The Cybertruck wasn't even out yet. We'd only seen pictures.
Yeah, no. Arizona has been really ahead of the curve on a lot of the spittoon laws.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, it's where they should be, how often to be emptied.
Yeah, and how many per.
How many per.
If you have a factory, there has to be a certain amount of spittoons per factory workers.
Because that's basic. That's OSHA. That's OSHA.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, yeah.
You know, when Charles Dickens came to the country, he said that because people used to spit on the ground, and he said it was disgusting and that it looked like a carpet. Yeah, yeah.
I think as a good rule of thumb, I don't think laws about human anatomy should be made by people who are spitting on the ground.
That's a good point right there.
We have Paula Poundstone here, and there's no spittoon.
I gotta have a spittoon.
Where's her spittoon?
I didn't literally bump into Carrie Lake, but I think I was in, I guess it was the Phoenix airport one morning, and I did see her. And she was, you know, she was like holding court with a bunch of people around her. I assume she was just traveling somewhere and people gathered around her. But she had a fake background.
Yeah, like a gauzy step and repeat back there.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah. Is who's running against it? Ruben Gallego?
Ruben Gallego, yeah.
Ruben Gallego. He always sends out tweets going, "This is not the tweet I wanted to send." Do you get that one?
I've seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish someone could help him find the tweet that he does want to send, because I've gotten several of the ones that he didn't want to send.
There's a larger issue. It's not to criticize anything about Ruben Gallego's tweets. I do see often posts on social media where someone says something like, "I really didn't want to make this video," or "I really tried to avoid having to tell you all this." And it's like, not hard enough.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd be amazed how easy it is to not share this personal anecdote about someone who wronged you.
Yeah.
You'd be amazed.
Yeah, yeah. No, they're not responsible in any way. You know what? Once you've given money to any candidate, your feed just fills with emails from the candidates asking for money, and I try to support them. In fact, just today, I sent a donation to, I'm going to say it wrong, Vote Save America.
Vote Save America.
I sent a donation to Vote Save America today because you guys figure out where the money can be best used.
Yes, we do.
With candidates around the country.
Absolutely.
And
go to votesaveamerica.com.
So again.
And we'll help you find the best ways to donate when there are so many people asking. Go to Vote Save America and they'll tell you the best ways to donate. You can donate to our Senate fund, which sends it to the Senate races where we got the best shot. You'll send it to the Anxiety Relief Fund, which is where you can donate to local organizations that are on the ground doing really good work. And once a month, you get an update about where your money's doing the most good. It's a great resource because, you know, we're getting all these taxes too much.
It is too. But I love that I can turn to people who know what they're doing, because I don't know the races all around the country.
No, how could you? How could any of us?
But you guys all together there, you have that collective wisdom, and I assume that you hire people to help with that as well. And so I'm happy to give
that
money. But if I start getting emails from John Lovett saying, you know, I didn't want to have to send this email.
All right.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
But to your point, all of these Republicans spent their careers fighting for this exact outcome, ran election after election promising to achieve abortion bans, keeping anti-abortion laws in place for when Roe would be overturned, only to discover that, as many predicted, it's of course deeply unpopular and terrifying to take away basic human rights in a democracy. You can't buy a ticket to Avenue Q and then be mad when it's puppets. Also on Wednesday, Arizona Republicans in both houses of the legislature blocked Democratic efforts to repeal the 1864 ban. Republican leaders said there was no need to rush, as the law probably wouldn't take effect for a few weeks. "Oh, no worries then," said a 16-year-old who doesn't know she's pregnant yet. Speaking of freaks trying to return us to the good old days of the 19th century when phones couldn't even transmit pornography, House Speaker Mike Johnson spent the week scrambling to protect his job from Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, who renewed her threat to oust him over his intention to send more aid to Ukraine. Whether it's Mike Johnson's job or Hunter Biden's hog, no one's safe. From MTG.
I just want to say a little something. It's not timely, but about... Marjorie Taylor Greene. At Thanksgiving, she kept sort of goading the PETA organization, mm-hmm. Because PETA makes it's a good time of year to make a plea to people not to eat turkey. And the truth is, turkeys are very nice.
I mean, some might say it's the absolute worst time of year to try to get people to not eat turkeys. when you think about it.
Well,
because getting someone to not eat turkeys in April, no big lift. But that's the one time we were all pretty committed to it.
Yeah.
It's well, actually the stupidest day to argue against turkeys.
No, the truth is people don't really eat turkey any time, other time of year. Maybe at like Subway or something.
But maybe if they convince us to not have turkeys in June and August.
Right,
we'll
but
be more
people don't eat turkeys in June
they
and
eat a little.
August. I mean,
I'm just saying, like if you're going to argue to tell people not to have trees in their home, you'll be more successful if you do it in October than if you do it in December.
Okay, but the tree is in front of you in December.
For sure.
It's a good time of year to bring people's attention to the problem. And so PETA does so. And so Marjorie Taylor Greene was trying to goad them. And so she made this post where she showed like her turkey in the pan and it had like some foil around it. And I looked at it and I said, look, it's wearing her hat. it's a joke that, there's only a few days you can tell it usually, right around Thanksgiving.
Well, it's a very specific joke. It requires Marjorie Taylor Greene to post food with tinfoil.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can't really do it.
No. There's no good time to bring it up. There just isn't. So, you were talking about...
But you
about,
did, honestly, but it killed here.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Don't you wish you could time travel?
Oh, all the time. Mostly to go back in time and do sick tweets and kill Hitler. Kill Hitler as an adult, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Why would you do it as a baby? You just could get in trouble for killing a baby.
Yeah.
If you
Well,
you
the Democrats do, right up.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Democrats have been... Every fucking time somebody says something as stupid as... The Democrats, when you're on the pro-abortion people, they want to make it. They kill the babies all the way up until birth. I would like some names. You need to cite a specific because that's just absurd, and no one ever did that. That's just absurd.
It's absurd. I think it would be amazing if Vice President Kamala Harris went because she's going to Arizona and gave a speech about how important it is to protect abortion rights. And how disgusting it is that Donald Trump is saying this, that Democrats want to kill babies after they're born, and then just comes out and says, there's only one baby I would kill, and that's Hitler. And just let it, and just not, just totally
right,
serious,
right.
Just leave
yeah.
it out there.
Yeah.
Just get it out there,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm so glad you're not her consultant.
No. That's why I do this now.
Yeah.
Anyway, said Mike Johnson about his attempts to woo Marjorie Taylor Greene, I'm going to try reasoning with her. As he strapped on a flak jacket and doused his sensitive areas in wolf urine. Greene released a 5-page rant on Tuesday on why she filed a motion to vacate, accusing Johnson of working with Democrats to advance Biden's agenda. Remember, Paula, when politicians used to brag about reaching across the aisle to serve our common interests? I don't, because I'm extremely young.
Well, they did. They used to reach across the aisle to serve our common interests.
Yeah,
yeah, they did.
You think?
There were some reasonable. I remember watching the Iran-Contra hearings, and I'm going to screw up on the names. It was Daniel Inouye because it was co-chaired. It was Daniel Inouye, and then it was a guy from New Hampshire whose name I can never remember, but he was a Republican. And I don't know about his voting record, but in terms of how they ran those hearings, he was a straight shooter and a good guy. It was very possible for that to be done back then. And then John Lovett was born into the world.
I remember when I worked in the Senate.
With a hell in a handbasket.
Daniel Inouye was a member of the Senate then, and it was always one of the great names to hear. It would always be like, Akaka, I, Inouye, I. It just sounded nice. Akaka, I.
I don't remember Akaka, and that's why when first hearing it from you, it was just
you don't remember
strange.
Akaka?
I don't. There was a guy named Akaka?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Imagine how rough the second grade had to be for that guy. I remember Representative Doodoo Head.
One of the best to ever do it. Paul Pounce. On Wednesday, House Republicans blocked Johnson's attempt to reauthorize Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which lets the U.S. government spy on the communications of non-Americans located outside the country for intelligence purposes. Far-right Republicans tanked the bill shortly after Donald Trump directed them to kill it because he said it was used against him, even though the part of the FISA law used in the Russia investigation Trump is referencing was a different section. He was just wrong. at last texted a terrorist to another terrorist he's secretly in love with. We're alone. As Johnson tried to get back in Green's good graces, he also made plans to visit Mar-a-Lago on Friday to join Trump for a major announcement on election integrity, and good luck to him. Mike Johnson does not look like someone who would thrive in Florida. He looks like someone whose top half will be third-degree sunburned and whose bottom half will be inside of an alligator before he's left the airport. He's not made for Florida, that guy.
There are alligators everywhere there, too. Any body of water in Florida, there's a fucking alligator in there, and they are gross.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm an animal lover, but you know what? I draw the line at alligators. They're horrible, awful creatures. Big old mouths and ugly eyes and big teeth and just rah, rah, rah. I mean, I know it's a radio show, but for you guys, rah, rah, rah. Yeah, no, they're horrible. They're horrible. And, you know, I used to live in Orlando briefly. I lived in Orlando. I didn't fit in. I wasn't weird enough. And about 5 o'clock every day, it poured rain. And because on the sides of the highway, there's like gullies so that the water drains off. And all the alligators from one side of the gully would cross the street to the other side of the gully. And there's tons of them. Tons of them. You can't go anywhere near water there. You ever go to Florida?
Yeah. My parents live there.
Oh, Jesus, call them.
Nah, they're all right.
Do they have a pool?
No alligators in there, though.
Yeah.
They have a little dog.
Yeah.
So they don't walk close to the edge.
They have a little dog.
They had two.
I bet they used to have three.
But you don't have to tell them twice. Johnson has also offered Green a seat on his kitchen cabinet of top advisors he plans to put together.
You know, speaking of kitchen cabinets, I remember watching the news one time, and there was a lady in Florida, and she was up on her kitchen counter because a fucking alligator had come in the kitchen. It had come from outside into the kitchen, and she had climbed up on the counter to get away from the alligator until somebody could come rescue her. Did you ever see that?
No, but it is making me feel this, which is alligators, sure, they're very scary, but you're always, as long as there is something about 2 feet off the ground, you're kind of invincible. Obviously they're scary, but they can't go up.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
They don't bend like that.
Yeah, no, they don't.
You've never seen an alligator do like an up dog.
Yeah, no.
They don't go up.
Let's just call your parents right now. I am so worried.
It's 1 a.m. in Florida. I'm not going to call my mother at 1 in the morning.
She might be on the kitchen counter.
She'll think someone's dead. I'll call her. Yeah. She'll pick up. Then she'll die of a heart attack. Then my father will die of a heart attack. And then I got to find out what their fucking passwords are.
Uh-huh. Because, yeah.
They'll be dead, and I don't know how to get in anything. CNN reported this week that one of RFK Jr.'s campaign officials, Rita Palma, attended the Stop the Steal rally in D.C. on January 6th and told a meeting of New York Republicans that getting Kennedy on the ballot would help get rid of Biden, which she said was her top priority. Of course, her strategy to peel away Biden voters is to make Kennedy as much like Trump as possible. We continue to luck out, Paula, that many of our most evil people would also take the most time to solve a Monday crossword. The New York Times crossword, the Monday is the easiest.
Oh, I had no idea.
After that video circulated, RFK Jr.'s campaign manager and daughter-in-law announced
that... That's like a Mensa inside thing. You know, that's a little overachiever. That's a child prodigy joke right there. That's what that is. Oh, the Monday crossword puzzle is the easiest. Yeah.
Saturday's hardest.
Saturday's...
Sunday's big, but not as hard as Saturday.
Yeah.
It's just more. Yeah, yeah. It's just more. And Thursday's cheeky. Thursday will trick you. Thursday's got bits. Thursday's like, oh, you want to do a crossword? Some of these boxes, they're 6 boxes. They call it a rebus.
Okay, I'm not familiar with any of what you're talking about right now, other than the New York Times. I've heard of the New York Times. Well, I read too slow to read the New York Times.
Here's the thing about the New York Times, which a lot of people don't realize, is that the New York Times is a thriving game company with a newspaper that occasionally makes news along the side of this game app that is the core of their fucking business. Like, it's just the whole New York Times app, that big building, all those reporters traveling around the world, getting all their little scoops, gathering their scoops together. All that work, all that effort, mm-hmm. the editing, the fact-checking, the traveling, the digging deep, the meeting with sources in the back of scary buildings, all of that is secondary to the project of the New York Times financially, which is the crossword, the Wordle, and now more important to them than their international section, connections.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of like what people do on the New York Times, they go and they play games, and if you're lucky, one of their eyes will accidentally catch a story about the economy, and that's a win. That's a win for the New York Times. It is a crossword app with a little news operation attached to it.
Okay, do you remember, was it the Washington Times that had the guy that counted Trump's lies?
Yeah.
Yeah. The New York Times has a guy who counts the days in Biden's life.
You could automate it.
Yeah. No, not at the New York Times. They need, you know, boots on the ground.
Anyway, they fired that RFK Jr. person I was talking about a few minutes ago, said the campaign manager. She failed to stick to our very basic campaign message, which is that Tylenol causes fibromyalgia. While speaking at Georgetown University on Tuesday, former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy blamed Matt Gaetz for his ouster from the speakership.
I'll give you the truth why I'm not speaker. It's because one person, a member of Congress, wanted me to stop an ethics complaint because he slept with a 17-year-old. Did he do it or not? I don't know.
McCarthy went on to say, he showed me photos on his phone, but that could have been anyone's micropenis. Amy Harris, a Florida woman who 4 years ago stole Joe Biden's daughter's diary and sold it to the far-right group Project Veritas, has been sentenced to a month in prison and 3 months in home confinement. This is why you don't keep a diary. You never know when James O'Keefe might get his slimy little hands on it. At the end of the day, I take all my swirling thoughts and feelings and experiences and I crush them down like a trash compactor. Gotta get them real deep. Gotta really push them down in here. Gotta get them fucking down. Gotta push them all the way. Fucking get them deep. Get them. Just crunch them. Crunch them. You just keep working. Diaries are from a time before smartphones. Diaries are from a time before phones. You don't need a diary. Everybody should have one friend they treat like a diary. And that friend treats you like a diary. That's the deal. You need one friend who you call on the way home from work and basically trauma dump on them. Everything that happened that day. And then they do it to you. You need that. And sure, you can have a friend like that, and then eventually she says, hey, I have kids now. Maybe you could tell this to a therapist. Where was I? The judge who sentenced the diary thief, Harris, called her theft and the sale of the diary despicable. Continued the judge, why, this must be the worst thing that's ever happened to someone with a diary.
The judge said that?
Yeah, the judge said that.
He said, this must be the worst thing that's ever happened to someone with a diary?
Yeah.
Huh. was it an Anne Frank reference?
Well, it was sort of an oblique one until this very moment. I think it was sort of like out there, but not out there. Then it was sort of, you know, sort of like letting everyone kind of enjoy the thought of that yeah, without ever saying the name.
Yeah, it took me a minute to come around to that. Okay, wait, I have to tell you something about... I have to tell you something about diaries. Okay, it's a very long story, but I'm going to shorten it.
Oh, wow.
Because I understand that there are some other guests. So years ago, I was in a restaurant in New York, and Alan Rickman came in, and I went over and spoke with him, and I was not good. I shouldn't have. It was wrong. I shouldn't have done it. The worst thing that I did was I said, I'm at a table with other people and we all know all these movies that you're in, but no one can remember your name.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
It was,
hey.
I shouldn't have done it. And he went like this, Alan Rickman. And I was like, okay. And by then I really knew that I had messed up. And I was like, okay, oh, thanks. Okay. And I was, okay. So there's more to the story, but I don't want to tell you. So Alan Rickman's diaries got published. I had told this story on my podcast. And so people wrote to me and said, you're in Alan Rickman's diary. He said that I think it was that I was unspeakably rude. I think is what he said.
Well, that's an oxymoron. You can't.
Well, maybe it wasn't unspeakably. Because
he certainly wrote it down. You know, he
felt
spoke,
that I was very rude.
He gave voice to it for sure.
Well, I just picture him sitting on the edge of his bed, you know, with the little diary and the little lock and the key that he hold, you know, and just, you know, dear diary.
Right. How
Paul
soon after
Poundstone was so rude to me.
I don't want to insinuate anything, but how soon after your run-in with Alan Rickman did he die?
I was nowhere near Alan Rickman in many years.
Okay. The EPA on Wednesday finalized the nation's first ever rule requiring water utilities to remove toxic forever chemicals from drinking water, which officials say will help prevent thousands of illnesses, including cancer.
Wait, when did they decide to do that?
Today, I guess. Or this week. This week they decided.
To take forever chemicals?
Out of the water.
Did they say toxic or just forever?
They're toxic forever chemicals.
And they just decided today?
Well, I think we've
come... take them out?
I think they decided they've been trying to get to the point where they could issue this rule.
Who decided to put them in? That would be my first question.
I think kind of, well, sure. I think we can get it just sort of the
Is there any way Arizona can take us back to toxic forever chemicals in our water? We hope against hope. My fingers are crossed. It's just weird that today they decided to take out the toxic forever chemicals.
Well, I think we've been learning more and more about how dangerous these chemicals are and the way in which they last forever.
Yeah.
I guess forever doesn't mean what it used to, said a molecule of perfluorooctane sulfonic acid that entered your bloodstream when you played blocks on a carpet protected by Scotchgard in 1993. And in other poison news, Consumer Reports has called on the USDA to remove Lunchables from the National School Lunch Program, citing a test of the snack kits that found relatively high levels of cadmium, sodium, and lead. I love a warning about lead and sodium in the same breath. These children's meals have poison in them, toxic, brain-damaging poison. Also, too salty.
You know what? When I read that last night, and I texted my daughter I said, look up Lunchables right now. I said, because I dropped the hammer on Lunchables. I might have let my kids have them twice. And then I'm just like, no. And they would beg me. And
was the siren song of the fucking Lunchable. Those ads, those boxes. There's something about the idea of a fully contained meal that you can carry in a box that it was intoxicating to the child's mind. And then they came out with the ones that also had a Capri Sun in them. And you're like, my God, it's all there. It's all there. They've cracked it. Everything you could need. Cracker, meat, cheese, brownie, Capri Sun. It's
all groups.
Fucking
all the food
there.
Groups.
They did it. Yeah. They did it. Those bastards at Oscar Mayer, they fucking did it. And you try to get it in that cart, and what happens? All but the worst moms get it right out of there. Some moms are busy. Please don't stay out of the comments. I'm just kidding. Good moms buy Lunchables, except now they can't. Now they have lead.
They had like a separate little, because I did like compartments when I was a kid.
You love a compartment.
I love camping dishes that
for
had
sure.
compartments. But the Lunchables had a different section. Like, you're right. It had the meats. It had the crackers. It had the cheese. Had a whole divot in there. A whole section just for riboflavin.
Yeah, to dip, for those who wanted to dip. Speaking of brain damage, on Thursday, the Tennessee House passed a bill that makes it illegal to marry your first cousin in the interest of public health. The bill doesn't say I can't fuck her, though, said one of the members of the House who didn't realize his mic was on. That's just a joke. No one actually said that. Republican Representative Gino Bolso, whose grandparents were first cousins, fought against the bill, arguing that incest should be okay if a genetic counselor approved. Said Mr. Bolso, and that is especially clear if you glance here at my family tree. Oh, I'm sorry. My family tangle of spaghetti. See, personally, and maybe this is just me, if my grandparents were first cousins, not only would I not announce it, I would go out of my way to avoid suspicion. I'd be the one standing up during the incest bill debate saying not only should marrying your first cousin be illegal, it should be against the law to marry anyone who looks like, even a bit like you. Marrying someone who shares zero genes was good enough for my unrelated grandparents, and it's good enough for me, Gino Bolso. Bolso also argued that this bill could violate same-sex marriage rights, saying, is there a public health issue with a male marrying a male first cousin? Obviously, I think the answer is no. Hey, thanks for the help, Gino. But speaking for the gay community, that's not our culture. Marrying your cousin is one of the straightest things a person can do. It's right up there with four couples going out to dinner. And even though it's one table for eight, really, it's four women having dinner and four men having another dinner. Not comfortable with that because you do that. And then the interesting thing, Paula, when you see four straight couples going out to dinner at a restaurant and they're at the table for eight, and it's basically two women on each side here and two men on this side here, what's interesting is which couples get to sit together, right? Because there's always two couples are separated and two couples get to sit with their spouses. And it's always interesting to see which spouses sit together and which ones are like, see you later, honey. I'm going to sit on the other side of the table, get the fuck away from you for 2 hours.
Did you get this from the New York Times?
Look.
It's like one of those puzzles. It's one of those puzzles you were talking about. Which
sure.
couple sits and there's two women on one side and two men. I'm not good at math jokes.
I'm sorry.
No, that was a lot. I was trying like hell to follow.
Speaking of bad relationships, former NFL player, broadcaster, and friend of the show, O.J. Simpson, died Wednesday at age 76. Ask not for whom the glove fits. Paula, we have so many O.J. jokes. More like no J. Simpson. Paula, it is with a heavy heart, we announce that the juice is loose. Dance like no one's watching. Love like you've never been hurt and stab like you won't be convicted. Live, laugh, glove, Paula Poundstone. I'm so sorry. We'd like to take the moment to acknowledge the victims of O.J. Simpson's crimes, which, legally speaking, were sports collectors. It's a tough break for Trump. Now he'll need a new running mate. TMZ has obtained a video of OJ's death and warning the footage is graphic. Oh, no. Yeah, well, he falls out the fucking boat after. And I just want to say, obviously, given this OJ news, it's like, fuck cancer.
Is that what he died from?
Yeah.
Cancer?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's why that book's coming out by Cancer Called, If I Did It. Before he died in an Arctic prison, Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny wrote a memoir titled Patriot, which will be published in the U.S. in October. This is a personal attack on anyone who's ever said, I can't write under these conditions in regards to somebody using a leaf blower outside. The Vatican released a new document on Monday which says that any sex change intervention is a grave violation of human dignity. And we're the experts in dignity, said the Pope from beneath a giant gilded hat while sitting in a glass-enclosed throne on the back of a pickup truck. The document states that gender theory intends to deny the greatest possible difference that exists between living beings, sexual difference. And here I thought the greatest possible difference that exists between living beings is being an uptight, overworked female executive in the big city who travels to her rural hometown to finally sell her family's decrepit old house before Christmas Eve versus being a hunky but disheveled contractor sent to fix a leaky roof of a decrepit old house who hates coastal elites, chugs beer, and swears no woman could ever tame him. Anyway, Mr. Pope, we've got cousins marrying over here, if you care to focus on that. Speaking of gross emanations from Europe, the Paris 2024 Olympics may have to cancel or postpone the swimming portion of the triathlon if France can't clean up the filthy River Seine after a nonprofit warned that the river had higher than permitted levels of bacteria, including pollution of fecal origin.
Wow. Well, they can't just use tap water.
The French public are against cleaning up the river because they are afraid it will lose its perfect flavor. Said French officials, we were doing so well. It had been so clean until that Dave Matthews Band tour bus drove across the bridge. The plan to fix the river involves placing signs that read, welcome to the Aris 2024 Olympics. Notice there's no pee in it. Please keep it that way. Italy's Mount Etna has been puffing a record number of perfectly circular smoke rings into the air for the last week or so. Volcanologists believe this may be an indication that the volcano is trying to impress a girl volcano. If you listen closely, Paula Poundstone, you can hear a faint noise coming out of the volcano that says, I make of the smoke. And finally, State Farm canceled 30,000 home insurance policies in California to reduce their financial risk in areas prone to wildfires, including tony areas like Bel Air, the Palisades, and Beverly Hills. So when it comes time to eat the rich, at least they'll be served well done. Doesn't really make sense because just because your house doesn't have fire insurance doesn't mean you're more likely to die in a conflagration, you know?
Well, that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Paula Poundstone. You can see Paula at Town Hall in New York on April 19th. Up next, we're getting petty with Hari Kondabolu.
Oh, boy.
Paula Poundstone.
That was so nice meeting.
That was so fun. That was so much fun.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Burrow. Now the weather is starting to get a little nicer, and we're all trying to spend a little more time outside. And now you can bring the comfort and style of being indoors outside with the Outdoor Collection from Burrow. Burrow is a new kind of furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And that extends to their outdoor collection. For example, seating that allows for easy assembly and disassembly so you can move or store them away as needed. No tools necessary. Burrow's outdoor furniture is made for all seasons and built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. They also pride themselves on their weather-ready teak, which is grade A FSC certified and offered at a great price point. No matter what you choose, you always get free shipping on every order, which can run up to $100 for larger items. That's where they get you. I'm a huge fan of Burrow. We have great couches from Burrow that I love, and they look great and they're easy to kind of customize. Plus their outdoor stuff is, it's really simple to assemble and to move and take in and out. So I highly recommend it. Love It or Leave It listeners can get 15% off their first order at burrow.com/loveit. That's Burrow, burrow.com/loveit for 15% off. burrow.com/loveit. This podcast is brought to you by Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Americans United defends your freedom to live as yourself and believe as you choose, so long as you don't harm others. Core freedoms and even democracy itself rest upon the wall of separation between church and state. While Christian nationalists are attacking these freedoms, seeking to force us all to live by their narrow beliefs, Americans United is fighting back. Freedom without favor and equality without exception. Learn more about AU's work at au.org/crooked. That's au.org/crooked.
My name is Sarah, and I got involved with Vote Save America way back in 2018 when it first launched.
My name is Nancy, and I first got involved in VSA in 2018.
Ever since then, Vote Save America has been the best part of my political engagement. Anytime the election anxiety starts to feel overwhelming, I remind myself that my anxiety relief program donation is fueling grassroots organizations around the country.
And VSA has the Political Action Finder, a handy website I've used to find phone banks, knowing that I'm helping to win critical House seats.
In fact, I already signed up to volunteer with the Political Action Finder on the VSA website and helped replace disgraced former volleyball star George Santos.
So if you're someone who doesn't want to wake up on November 6th this year and regret not doing more, and I'm pretty sure you are, go to votesaveamerica.com to get started, and I'll see you at a phone bank soon.
This message has been paid for by Vote Save America. You can learn more at votesaveamerica.com, and this ad has not been authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
And we're back. Hey. The world is full of big, important problems. Democratic backsliding wars, that fungus that's turning all the cicadas gay, probably some other stuff. But if you only ever think about our biggest problems, eventually you start looking like shit and stop getting invited to parties where people are doing cool drugs. So here to go deep on some problems so tiny we feel silly even bringing them up, it's Hari Kondabolu.
Hello. Hello. Hi. Oh, thank you. Oh, what a full applause that was.
Yes, and just purely earned off their excitement and expectation for your comedy.
Yeah.
For the thing they know you'll bring.
Yeah.
Which
not
are
guilted
the laughs.
In any way.
Not at all. Not at all.
Clapping harder.
What's the smallest thing that bothered you today? Mine was that the coldest Diet Cokes weren't at the front of the office fridge because someone didn't move up the cold cans before they loaded in more Diet Cokes. But don't worry, I fired them.
Well, this is an ongoing thing, but why do we have to sign the receipt when we use credit cards? I mean, the government has our eyes and they have our fingerprints just so we can avoid a line, kind of, because now everybody has clear. And like, you're telling me with all that security technology, we still got to sign the receipts? Who's checking the receipts?
Who's checking the receipts? It also, I've been... I'm just going to say it. We're just going to deal with what I'm about to say.
Okay.
And I'm putting enough ironic distance on it to make us all feel comfortable and not hate me after I say the sentence. I've been signing a lot of books lately. And
oh, boy.
I told you.
Yeah,
did
sorry.
I tell you?
Yeah.
I told you. Yeah. And so one thing that we've noticed, the three of us have been just signing these pages, is my signature is completely different. Every single time. It's a new one every fucking time. I don't have a one signature. I have 5,000 signatures. And we're doing voter signature verification. Everybody's signature looks fucking different every goddamn time.
Especially when you sign the receipt, fuck off.
Yeah, you sign it, fuck off. That's a lot of time. I think it's just put a squiggle.
Yeah, just a squiggle. But nobody's checking. Why are we doing it?
Why are we doing it? Why are we doing it? Hey, like, when is the last time someone looked, turned over your credit card, said, no signature, where's your ID, sir? Doesn't happen.
No,
not in this economy. All right, now we're going to pet peeve for the gold. In a game we're calling, I think you should peeve. That's a cicada sound. Oh, where there we are, Statler and Waldorf.
Look at that.
In each round, I'm going to tell Hari about one of my tiny grievances. Hari will tell us about one of his, and we'll decide once and for all who's the pettiest, peeviest bitch on this stage. It's a peeve off. Are you ready, Hari?
Yes.
All right. Why don't you kick us off with a peeve?
Okay. The true crime genre, it's not true crime. It's just crime. It's just crime. Why? Because there's already a crime genre. Why are we saying that it's true crime and crime? It should be crime, and that should be fake crime. Because it's fake crime.
What do you mean?
Like all like crime films, like Law and Order, all that stuff. It's fake crime. If you're gonna have a true, there
it
should
is be no crime true, and fake crime, not crime and true crime.
The default is crime is reality. The default is reality. It's like fiction and nonfiction. Nonfiction? Fuck you, fiction. Like it's fiction and reality. Reality is the baseline we should be using.
Right. Fiction is one section. It's a kind of thing. Everything else should just be true, right? There's history and geography and several other different kinds
other
of
genres
of ways people get read by. Listen, you know, we all know all the kinds of books. All right. I think that's a good one. I'm gonna go. Taking your cart to the self-checkout at the grocery store. I agree that there's no sign that says this is not for carts, but it spiritually runs counter to the philosophy of the self-checkout. The self-checkout should be for baskets or nothing. It should be for moving quick. If you've got a cart with all different shaped items, if you're at the cart level at the grocery store, you go to a cashier who's a professional at finding the fucking coats. You're not a professional at finding the coats. You're a moron. I agree. The system we've built where we check out our own groceries in order to save Albertsons a tiny bit of money that we're all participating in because we all could choose to wait in line for the cashier, but instead we choose the robots so that we do the job for Albertsons, right, and subsidize Albertsons in their efforts to, I don't know, eke out another fucking dirty penny. So sorry. But if we're going to live in that world, you've got a cart full of shit, you go to the cashier. If you have a basket and you're going to have five items, okay, you're going to find one on the can, one on the thing, one on the thing, and you're going to get out of there. That's my pet peeve.
Also, why are the shopping carts not, like, controlled by remotes?
Well, I think we should we... All right, audience, whose peeve was bitchier?
Can I give him another peeve?
Well, we're going to go back and forth. We're going to do a couple.
Okay, gotcha.
Shopping carts are for the main lines, not the self-checkout, or true crime should just be called crime. Shopping carts?
Wow.
Crime. Not even close.
Thanks.
I didn't have them.
Wow.
I didn't have them.
Wow.
They don't know. They don't go to the grocery store. They're personal shoppers. Go to the grocery store. Let's hear one.
Okay. I hate when you're having a conversation with somebody like at a party and then someone they recognize shows up and interrupts your conversation. And then those two people start talking and neither of them acknowledge you. Like the person you were originally talking to doesn't introduce you. Hey, this is my friend Hari. And the other one's like, hey, my name is so-and-so. Sorry for interrupting. And you're just standing there like a fucking asshole with your dick in your hand. And you're like just waiting to get included and you're not. So do I go back and get some snacks? Is it rude to leave? And then finally the person who interrupted leaves and then it's just you and the other guy, and the other guy is like, well, where do we leave off? It's like, you just assume I'll come back to you? You assume after you dump me, all of a sudden, yeah, I don't know anybody else at the party. Yes, I am coming back, but it's bullshit.
Well, usually I find that is often because no one having that interaction knows the right name. They don't know the names. You should jump in. So my rule is if I'm talking to a friend and someone comes up and says to the friend, oh, hi, friend, it's great to see you, and they don't immediately introduce me, I think that you have to have a baked-in assumption that your friend is desperate for you to be their friend and jump in before anyone could suspect that they didn't know the new person's name and say, hi, I'm John, so that your friend gets to do the performance of a lifetime, which is this move. Oh my God, I'm being crazy. Because by the time you finish the, oh my God, I'm being crazy, that new person has already said their name, and you get to do what I think is one of the most disgusting things we all do, which is just say the name Fred on the count of three. One, two, three.
Fred.
This is Fred.
Hey. I don't know, John. That's a little victim blaming.
Here's mine. I don't know what happened to the society where we decided it was acceptable at restaurants for the first interaction you have at that restaurant for someone to come up the table and say, would you like free water or would you like to buy expensive water for no reason? It is absolutely fucking bananas. It is so insulting because you're like, what? There's no other point in the restaurant experience where someone comes up to you and says, hey, do you want something or do you want something good and expensive? Like I'd like a chicken salad, and they're like, oh, you like the chicken salad, but would you also like a lobster tail on top or something? I didn't land it. I could have.
you kind of did somehow.
Yeah, I got it back. But you know what I mean? The water thing is fucking crazy. It's a crazy thing that we've all accepted. Like, hi, look, we're trying to get $7 extra onto every bill that we can. That's the nature of this business. And I think the restaurant business is terrible. Wouldn't do it. Wouldn't want to be a part of it. Don't want to be in the restaurant business. Wouldn't want to be a college professor. Neither what? Job appeals to me at all.
Why not a college professor?
Oh.
Summer vacations. Nah. Once you get tenure, fuck it all.
Well, that's the whole thing. Yeah. Sure, you got tenure, but you got to get tenure.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
You got to get tenure. You know, being a tenured professor would be nice, but I'm starting at fucking zero here, Hari. I'm not anything now. I don't even have an advanced degree.
You don't have an advanced degree?
I mean, I have a college degree, but I don't have an advanced degree.
Oh, okay.
I think my peeve was better. I don't want to know what they think. All right. Was it the thing about the names or was it the thing about the water? Names? Water? Tie. Good tie.
Tie, yeah.
All right, let's do another one.
I hate when people refer to me as Southeast Asian. I'm South Asian. All right, those are two very different places. South Asia is India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, so forth. Southeast Asia is Cambodia, Vietnam, Laos. Like, South Asia has like a fourth of the world's population. So technically, you're all minorities in this room. And it's fucking ridiculous. And also, secondly, like, Americans know who you bombed. Like, you need to know where you bombed, right? Like, you bombed Vietnam, you bombed Laos, you haven't bombed India yet, okay? You need to know, you got to know the victim's name, otherwise it's just more disrespectful.
That's right. I think that's right. I agree. That went into a deeper and larger kind of geopolitical peeve.
So I
kind of pressing up against the boundaries of the rules of the game, but you're safe. You're inside the boundaries. It's been ruled.
It just seems ridiculous. Imagine if someone came up to me and was like, hey, are you Vietnamese? I'm like, that's a bit of a jump, but you know, it's in the world of Asian, but it's in, why are you asking me if I'm Vietnamese? Are you Vietnamese? Why are we having this? I'm Indian or South Asian. Why is this complicated?
Yeah, why is it complicated?
Oh, God damn it. I was born in the wrong fucking country.
Here's something that bugs me. It's not the legacy of 50 years of American hegemony, but it bugs me. And it's the phrase non-comedogenic on skin products, which is a phrase that should mean won't clog your pores, but actually is not FDA anything. It's just a phrase you get to put on there and it means absolutely fucking nothing. And as somebody whose skin kind of breaks out, if you just think about putting it anywhere near something that could clog a pore, if you just think to yourself, I touched my face yesterday. If you just think it, pimples. Popped up. Terrible skin. but also very dry, Hari. Very dry skin. Very, very dry. Very, very dry skin. So it must be moisturized. But the second moisturized, even the smell of it touches my face. Pimple, pimple, pimple. So non-comedogenic says it won't clog pores, but it will, Hari. It will every goddamn fucking time. It clogs every pore it can get to. Non-comedogenic. They also put it on there because it's like a fancy sounding term. It sounds medical. It sounds rigorous. It sounds like it proves something, like it's based in something. It's not. It's simply not.
You know what? Fuck them. I give you the round right now.
Oh, stop it. Stop it.
That was petty.
Non-comedogenic.
Petty and irrelevant.
Can I tell you something? I've been using a bunch of very fancy skincare products, and I love it. And I'm going to buy more, and I'm going to use this brand for the rest of my life. And the brand, which I will not say here because...
It's a Jergens.
Because pay me. But they will never know that the reason I am a lifelong customer is because some PR team tried to get a lip balm to Vanessa Hudgens 3 years ago. And then they mailed it to where Vanessa Hudgens used to live, which is where I live. And after sending package after package after package of PR box of nonsense to her assistant would come by in a Mini Cooper, fill it all the way to the roof with free garbage and drive away. And eventually that stopped happening. And so now literally I can't stop it. I send every package that comes back to sender, but then people literally just drive by my house and throw free shit over the fence for Vanessa Hudgens, like invitations, a box of cupcakes. Hey, pop-up West Hollywood restaurant trying to get Vanessa Hudgens to come. Throwing a box of cupcakes over a fence does not result in the enticing advertisement you would have hoped it would. What it results in is a bag of chocolate fucking garbage I have to throw away. Not a big problem, a little peeve.
That's a really good humble brag. I used to live in Vanessa Hudgens' old place. I used to live in Suzanne Zhang's old place. She writes for The Atlantic.
You want to do one more peeve?
Can we do one last peeve?
One more peeve?
All right, fucking, I don't know if this even counts as a peeve, but fucking Oppenheimer was overrated. And it's absurd because they had the big kaboom 2/3 into the film. And then the last third was just them talking. We've seen the explosion. I don't care. And I don't care about Oppenheimer's sex life. Most people didn't know who Oppenheimer was in this country until the film came out. And then the film came out. And the only reason I feel that people cared is like, oh, Albert Einstein makes a cameo. Oh, this must be a real guy because Albert Einstein made a cameo in the film. And then, spoiler alert, and then there's a big explosion. And then the last third is just them talking and feeling bad about the explosion, even though Oppenheimer had ample time to think this through.
What I agree with is specifically that the whole movie, the first 2 hours, very interesting. I agree.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it becomes this story about Robert Downey Jr. And Robert Downey Jr. wins the Oscar, like, okay, for that performance. But the movie would be better if he just cut Robert Downey Jr. out of the film completely. He has no relevance to the core story. He's not involved in the making of the bomb, really.
No.
The whole hinge of like what was Einstein saying was kind of just like had nothing to do with Robert Downey Jr. He had Robert Downey Jr. was like, Einstein was mad at me and one day I'll find out why. Robert Einstein wasn't even thinking about him.
No.
He was thinking deeper thoughts about Robert Oppenheimer's guilt. But this movie also suffers from a problem of movies that we all have to deal with right now, which is we don't trust each other at all on any level as human beings. We don't let each other in traffic. We don't believe we understand each other. We don't believe anyone else is smart. Everyone thinks this way. And so every movie has some point in the movie where someone turns to camera and says, here is the thesis of this film. Huh. Like it, you know, there's a moment in Barbie where someone has to turn to camera and say, this is what Barbie's about. There's a moment in Oppenheimer where someone has to turn to camera and say, the bomb, boy, maybe it was worth it, but probably not. Right. I guess we'll be haunted by what we did forever. And no matter what awards we get, we'll always remember that what we did maybe wasn't the right thing to do. Isn't that right, Albert Einstein? Boy, boy, isn't it, J. Robert Oppenheimer? You Jewish man, played by a very not Jewish man. The least Jewish mannerisms I've ever seen in the history of film.
The dude from Peaky Blinders is very good in that.
Well, that's the, I mean, sure.
That's one.
That's
redeem.
Another thing. I'm a Paul Giamatti man. I'm a Paul Giamatti Oscar man in a Peaky Blinders Oscar world. You know?
His father banned Pete Rose.
Whose father?
Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti's father is the guy that banned Pete Rose for gambling?
Yeah. And then the idea was he was going to ban Pete Rose in a few years, probably reinstate him, you know, but then he died. And then, you know, that was that.
Wow.
And then Paul Giamatti made Sideways at some point.
Presumably the authority to allow Pete Rose back in would have been vested to a new person. It wasn't like they didn't bury Pete Rose in Giamatti's dad's sarcophagus.
No, but you know? But after that, nobody wanted to bring him back. They kind of like Giamatti had a plan, but the plan was never executed because he died.
And thank you, Hari. Yeah,
okay.
What? Catch Hari's next few shows on May 23rd at White Eagle Hall in Jersey City and May 25th at Off Cabot in Beverly, Massachusetts. We come back to Good Boys Talk About Bad Boys.
Don't go anywhere. This is Love It or Leave It, and there's more on the way.
My name is Sarah, and I got involved with Vote Save America way back in 2018 when it first launched.
My name is Nancy, and I first got involved in VSA in 2018.
Ever since then, Vote Save America has been the best part of my political engagement. Anytime the election anxiety starts to feel overwhelming, I remind myself that my anxiety relief program donation is fueling grassroots organizations around the country.
And VSA has the Political Action Finder, a handy website I've used to find phone banks, knowing that I'm helping to win critical House seats.
In fact, I already signed up to volunteer with the Political Action Finder on the VSA website and helped replace disgraced former volleyball star George Santos.
So if you're someone who doesn't want to wake up on November 6th this year and regret not doing more, and I'm pretty sure you are, go to votesaveamerica.com to get started, and I'll see you at a phone bank soon.
This message has been paid for by Vote Save America. You can learn more at votesaveamerica.com. And this ad has not been authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
The constant political chaos can be a lot. You gotta mix it up with a little regular chaos. Go behind the pods with Terminally Online, Cricket's loosest show, where the news takes a backseat to the unscripted antics of your favorite Pod Save America and Cricket Media hosts and staffers. Here, love it, learning about dating apps.
I was single in my 20s, and then yada, 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 I was single in my 40s.
Listen to my sage advice on being kind to retail workers. Just smile, walk away. You don't have a right to be an asshole. And enjoy Tommy celebrating the unrelenting wheel of time.
Time comes for all of us. You will all be out of touch with the culture. You'll all be asking someone what some equivalent of a yassified means.
Terminally Online is a subscriber-exclusive show. To get access, subscribe to our Friends of the Pod community at cricket.com/friends.
And we're back! There's one important date on all of our minds in 2024. One pivotal square on the calendar when, for better or worse, America and her future will be changed forever. That's right. I'm talking about June 7th, the release date of Bad Boys 4, Ride or Die. Here to help us prepare for what is, again, the single most important thing happening in 2024. It's the wonderful James III.
Hello, hello.
How are you? James, you're one of the hosts of the excellent podcast Black Man Can't Jump in Hollywood.
The excellent podcast. Yes, I am.
And at the end of the episode where you review the original 1995 Bad Boys, you personally gave the movie two raised black fists.
Yes, we did.
And that's good?
That is good. Well, so it's interesting because it's not so much about good or bad, but I guess positive in that it promotes black actors in Hollywood. So that's what the fists is about. So two, I guess, out of three black fists.
Oh,
Unless only two of us reviewed it, which I don't remember.
Bad Boys 2 has a rating of 23% on Rotten Tomatoes. Does that feel about right to you?
Yes, it does. 23%?
23%.
Potentially high.
Here's my... I have a problem with these kinds of rating systems because they're a little bit like percentage chance of rain. Does that mean the percentage of chance it's going to rain everywhere? Or the percentage of the percentage of the areas it's going to rain at any one time. Like, will it rain 23% of the time? Or is it going to be raining 23% of the places?
Yeah, what is
or some combination?
Am I going to like 23% of this movie? Or like, what does 23%
mean? Did 100% of the reviewers think it was 23% good? Or did 23 reviewers think it was good and 77% found it was 100% terrible?
Right. Yeah, I did. And I
don't,
we don't know. I do not know.
I don't like these rating systems. I don't like the algorithm. I don't like this society we're building.
No.
In the 17 years between Bad Boys 2 and 2020's Bad Boys for Life, the debate on the depiction of copaganda in media has shifted so much that people were using the word copaganda. has that affected the way you watch these movies? Has it changed how you watch them?
I think absolutely. I as a kid, particularly when that first Bad Boys came out, Martin Lawrence and Will Smith could do no wrong. They were my heroes. And then between Bad Boys 2 and Bad Boys 3, I was like, oh, that are they the villains of the movie? Like, are they? Because in the first and second movie, they have a bunch of informants that they just beat the shit out of. Like, they're like these people that are like giving them information about, like, letting them know the things that are going wrong in society. And they go up to them and they pull guns on them and they beat just all kinds of, they commit all kinds of crime, I think, crimes as cops. It makes it hard to watch.
In the film Face Off, starring John Travolta and Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage as John Travolta.
Mm-hmm.
He's the Nicolas Cage. John Travolta as Nicolas Cage.
Sure.
Sorry. John Travolta wearing Nicolas Cage's face has to escape from a maximum security prison.
That's right.
And he shoots his way out of that prison. He's a law enforcement official shooting his way out of a prison. But all those prison guards are just at work.
Just people going to
They don't know they've got the face-off technology. They're just like, hey, one of the worst terrorists in the country is trying to escape. Let's stop him. And then this federal law enforcement figure, dressed up as a bad guy, just kills everyone to escape.
It's wild. It is so infuriating in these movies when story is supposed to matter more than like real people's lives. Like, well, but he has to get out of that prison, doesn't he? It's like, well, sure. But that every single person we saw needs to go home to their families or just their lot or just their empty apartments. Like, they need to go home after this.
Yeah. And a lot of them didn't.
No.
Because they got killed. Like, in one of the Mission Impossible movies, Tom Cruise's plan is to basically, like, his involvement in the plan means a nuclear weapon basically almost destroys, I think, Moscow.
Yeah.
The Kremlin. And it's like, phew, we did it again. Okay, cool. It worked out, but a little close for comfort. If you hadn't been involved at all, this risk probably would have been lessened.
I think it's actually within
seconds.
Within seconds,
literal
right? That's the
seconds.
One where he goes, mission accomplished, you know, when he like hits the thing. It's a good movie. I like that movie.
Did you know that the producers of Bad Boys 2 had to go to then Florida Governor Jeb Bush to get an emergency stay of Florida's manatee protection laws so that they could film high-speed boat chases in the Miami River?
I did not know that.
No. I think that's cool. Do you know that over 375 manatees were killed during the making of Bad Boys 2?
You cannot tell me this. You can't tell me any number of manatee was killed, let alone, what was the number?
375.
No way. I can't accept, I won't accept it.
Well, you shouldn't. I made it up this moment. Are the bad boys still bad boys if they both start taking therapy seriously?
So I would say yes. I would say they're maybe even the baddest boys. Also considering how the movies are sort of rendered, it's like therapy is bad. Like, to do therapy is bad, and we don't do that because we're bad boys. So then in turn, it's like as bad boys to do therapy, they're perhaps the baddest of boys, you know?
Right, right, right.
Like, we're like, ooh, I'm
bad enough
going
for
to my
therapy.
Hour. Exactly. And like, I'm perhaps listening to the things that I'm being told, and I'm perhaps exercising some of the things that have come up in that. Like, I'm more bad than anyone.
Right. Sometimes, right. It takes a lot of badness to realize you need help. I think
the most, yeah, exactly. The more down you are, you have to hit rock bottom before you know anything is wrong at all.
Now it's time for a classic love it or leave it game called Okay, Stop. Here's how it works. We're going to get ourselves back in the bad boy state of mind by watching a few choice clips from Bad Boys 2, directed by America's sweetheart, Michael Bay. When either of us want to pause and comment on it, we'll say, okay, stop. I want to point out that one of the reasons we're doing this is we were talking about this, and Kendra asked me, like, have you seen Bad Boys 2? And I said, of course I have. When did you see it? The last time I saw it was when it came out.
Okay.
I have not seen a frame of this since it was in the theaters.
I'm very interested in your reaction.
So I don't... And there we are in the film.
We look great.
We look
goodness.
Great. Look at us. Look at us. All right, let's see the clip.
Hey, why don't you tell me there's a rally tonight? Who's looking? Take that shit. I'm out of here.
White power!
White power!
White power!
Okay, okay, stop. Can we stop?
Okay, stop.
Okay, this is...
This only has a 23%? This movie is awesome. That's so cool. What are you talking about?
I have to say, the first Bad Boys, at least my understanding of it, I don't know what happened to the script once these men were cast, but my understanding of the first Bad Boys movie is that it was like written and they were like, you know what? Dana Carvey's going to be great in this and another, and John Lovitz is going to be great in this. These white actors are going to be great in this. And then they were, and then somehow it got to Martin Lawrence and Will Smith, and the movie is fantastic. Not about the fact that they are black. Bad Boys 2 essentially opens with, you know what? A Ku Klux Klan rally. Black cops? Well, we got to show them at a Ku Klux Klan rally. That is an infuriating reality. It is fun to see look at this shot. Look at where we paused.
Awesome. It's classic.
That's fun. That is fun as hell. But I don't need to ever see that, I think.
I think what I appreciate about this is that, like, Michael Bay brings the same nuance and understanding to race in America as he does to there's an asteroid headed towards the Earth.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, they're black cops. They're going to be in a Klan suit and they're going to reveal themselves.
Yes.
And they're the ultimate undercover cops.
Yes,
because
yes.
They're black.
They're not. Yeah, exactly. They shouldn't be there. There's nothing about them that should be there.
Right. Like it wouldn't be interesting if they were white cops.
Yeah, it's like, I don't even know if police would actually be on their... written on their vest. They put it there just to make sure you know. Not only are they black, they are cops.
Blue power, motherfuckers, Miami PD.
Aw, damn. It's the Negros.
Casper, drop the bag. Alpha leader, bring them in.
Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do?
Oh, no.
What you gonna do when we come for you? And that's the best. And that's next, Miss Nose. Now, hey. Dude, you gotta learn the words. We usually only do the chorus.
I love this, I have to say.
I mean, the thing is, it's like they're so charming. They're holding this whole thing up on their shoulders.
Exactly. I mean, and also, like, you know, I can imagine that this sort of also comes from a situation of, like, if we're gonna do it again, if we're gonna come back, if we're gonna suit up, we gotta go as hard as possible, right? And so that's why we're here.
I also just, like... This is a moment where Martin Lawrence was one of the biggest stars in the country.
Absolutely.
He was fucking huge.
Absolutely.
Next clip. Should we do the next clip?
You trying to get my daughter high? You smoke Martin. That shit?
Nigga, who that is?
It's Reggie.
Who the fuck is Reggie?
I'm here to take Megan out.
What you want, nigga?
I'm here to take his daughter out.
What's your name?
Reggie.
Well, no, y'all heard the motherfucker say your name, Reggie. You want you taking Megan out?
Yes,
how old is you?
I just like 15. The scene.
Shit, nigga, you leave 30.
This is mine.
You fight? You can fight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you motherfucker, you can't fight. Look at
Mike,
you. Look.
Mike.
No, I want to know if the nigga. I want somebody gonna take my niece.
Okay, so
out.
I just wanna... is Will Smith playing this drunk?
Okay, yes. Yeah, so he's. What? So yes, if I remember correctly, because I have seen this since it came out, is that they knew that Reggie was coming over. And he has now become a character. This is not how he was acting moments ago. He's now become a character in order to scare the boys.
Oh, and this is to me, okay, so I feel like this is Michael Bay. So we did, Michael Bay was like, wow, two black cops infiltrating the Ku Klux Klan. That's
yes.
The coolest idea I've ever heard.
Absolutely, sure.
Now we're in a different kind of Michael Bay thing, which is imagine... if your dad was a cop
I bet he would use all of his cool cop skills to scare boys in a gendered way around what women need to be protected from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think if I remember correctly, speaking of in a gendered way, if I remember correctly, they play with that in a...
The nigga can fight. Somebody might come say something. The nigga can't fight. She can't go.
Make his godfather, okay? He just got out the joint.
Why you putting all my business in the street? Why you putting all...
Okay, wait a minute. Actually, okay, I'll call him. Pause here. First of all, why is the gun out? Why is the gun out?
This movie's awesome.
You don't need to pull your gun on just a kid. This is a kid. This is a... what is he?
He's 15. He's 15 years old. Just tall.
Pull out the gun. The reason I didn't even realize the gun was coming out. The reason I paused here is actually a thing that has bothered me about this movie. This is just my time to say this. None of you care. But the thing that bothers me about this part of this movie is they are clearly improvising. Martin is saying they got him from out the pen. They call him. They call him. We never hear what they call him. We never hear the joke that Martin had. It never comes. We never hear that he goes, they call him, they call him, and it never is revealed what the nickname was that was on the tip of Martin's tongue. And this has infuriated me since since 2002.
So they're loosely following something like a script.
Yeah.
And he's doing a bit about Will Smith's nickname. Yes. And Will Smith interrupts with his own bit. Yes. And they never went back and got anything usable.
We never hear who he is.
We never hear his prison nickname.
And that's it. And that's not even the part that I was talking about before. But I've just never been able to scream about how much this has...
That is
bothered me for decades.
I'm glad you told us. It's because it opens a loop that it never closes. Yeah. And like that happens in real life. Like somebody will that's why it's sad. That's why when there's always somebody that's very good at this in a dinner, that's like, well, they'll be back and forth. And then someone will be like, Jennifer, you were in the middle of something. And it feels so good for Jennifer.
Yes.
Jennifer fucking like, I was. Thank you.
Yes.
My mother is a bitch. And like, whatever.
God bless whoever it was that remembered that Jennifer.
And then
was
everybody
talking.
Gets the relief of that closed loop.
Absolutely.
But this is just an open loop.
Nope. We never know. And Bad Boys 3, I'll tell you, they don't talk about it.
They don't talk about it.
Okay,
just setting this up. They're at Guantanamo fucking Bay.
Because that's where they had to go. Okay.
I'm going to toss it right at your feet. Right next to the mine.
It's a minefield.
Right next to the mine?
It's a mine. They're in a minefield.
Oh, a mine. Just got shot in the head.
Oh boy.
Why is his midriff exposed?
You must be because of what happens next.
Oh!
So I'll also just say that this part ends on Will going, now that's how you're supposed to shoot. From now on, that's how you shoot. Okay, and this is a callback to two things. The end of the first movie, now that's how you're supposed to drive. From now on, that's how you drive, for those of you that don't remember.
And how dare you?
It's honestly. But it is also a callback to earlier in the movie, another frustrating thing about these, that sort of underlines how these guys are villain cops, which is, earlier in the movie, Martin Lawrence is in the passenger seat of like a car chase, and Will is driving. And Martin is, instead of shooting, he's like is pulling out his badge on people, trying to get them to stop. And he's like, that guy has a gun. You're supposed to shoot him. And then he, and then later Will shoots a guy and says, now show him your badge. Like, shoot, kill, then show your badge. Okay? This is, these guys were my heroes. They were my heroes, and now it's like, oh my God, have you been? Are you Lex Luthor? Like, what have you?
It's I sometimes, you know, when people, you know, the long arc of history bends toward justice. It's like, okay, sometimes, but I always think that, like, oh, things get better. Could you make Serpico now? I don't think so.
No, probably not.
Think you make Serpico now. Why is Serpico better about, like, you know, like, the dangers of unaccountable police, and then we just never, you can't make a Serpico again.
No.
I mean, it is boring, Serpico. This is way more fun. But nobody blows up by landing on a landmine at Guantanamo Bay in Serpico. They just have a hearing at the end. Sorry, spoiler alert for Serpico. The end of the movie is a hearing.
But
fucking Serpico. I hope they never make Serpico again. Serpico sucks.
But
what a downer. All the cops are corrupt.
I don't need
to see that. I need to see them dirty, but in a positive way for their daughters.
But if the movie was more the positive for their daughter's dirty way, for 2 hours, I would appreciate that more than them having carte blanche to do whatever they want, you know.
Bad Boys for Life. I'm excited about that. I'm excited to see them back. I'm gonna see it.
I'm 1,000% gonna see it. I'm nervous about it. I'm nervous about the new Bad Boys for two reasons. One is they announced that they were gonna do 3 and 4 back to back. But then when 3 came out, they called that one Bad Boys for Life. And I was like, oh, this, I'm already, they are not excited about whatever the fourth one could be. If you're going to name your third one Bad Boys for Life, you know,
right,
see,
that
what
sounds like the end.
That's the one you could also, but you could bad also boys do the thing for with for life.
Like
for the
two Bad Boys for Life.
Exactly. Right. Two Bad
two
Boys
bad, two life.
For Life.
Two yeah. Bad, two Life. Two Bad
Boys
for Life.
Plus two lives equals four, fourth movie. Title.
And this is what you get on James's podcast.
This is, yeah. Yes. Exactly this kind of deep dive on films is what you get on our podcast.
James, thank you so much for being here. We come back, we're going to end on a high note. And now, because we all need it, here it is, the high note.
Hi, John. I am a teacher in Phoenix, Arizona, and I attended your live show. My high note this week is that I am working with my advanced ESL students on writing an argument essay on a topic of their choice, and they had some different choices to pick from, and about 12 of my, let's say, 60 students decided to research, write, and argue on the topic of abortion access in Arizona. And I had conferences this week with them on, like, where they ended up with their perspectives. I tried to stay really neutral. I presented lots of information for them in their research. And I'm happy to say that all of my students that selected abortion as their topic are staunchly arguing the importance of remaining on the side of access for abortion in the state of Arizona. So shout out to you, shout out to teachers, shout out to Gen Z. They give me hope.
I love it. My sister Leon and I love listening to your show and sending cryptic texts to the other referencing lines from the show before the other has had a chance to listen. She and I were both born with the BRCA2 gene, giving us a very high risk of developing breast and ovarian cancer, like our mom did at age 40. As of a week ago, my sister completed her fourth and hopefully final surgery to eliminate her risk of breast cancer. This is on top of the 8 surgeries I've had through which my sister has been my primary caretaker. So hooray for sisters, hooray for preventative care and genetic testing, and hooray for comedic relief, which we so dearly needed during that process. Get your mammograms, know your risk. Thanks so much.
Thanks to everybody who sent in a high note tonight. If you want to send us a message about something that gave you hope, send us a voice memo to lowlyhighnotes@gmail.com. That's lowlyhighnotes@gmail.com. Or if you're a friend of the pod subscriber, you have the exclusive ability to leave us your high notes without the hassle of a call or email. Simply head over to the Friends of the Pod Discord and you can leave us one in the Love It or Leave It channel. You've all been so supportive of our upcoming book, Democracy or Else, How to Save America in 10 Easy Steps. And we think you're going to really love it. We really do. Every single one of you has grabbed a copy isn't just getting a useful and funny guide to making it through 2024. You're also going to help make a difference because Crooked will be donating its profits of the book from the book to support Vote Save America, plus to support Vote Save America and 2024 campaigns. Plus, the more of you who jump on board, the closer we will get to hitting the New York Times bestseller list. And you know who's been on the New York Times bestseller list? Donald Trump Jr. And we don't have a dad who can make the RNC buy our book in bulk. So if you haven't already, please go to crooked.com/books to pre-order your copy now. Again, we are donating all the proceeds to Vote Save America and 2024 campaigns. Get us on that fucking list. We worked hard on this book. It's actually very good. I'm shocked. All right. Also, like Commander Biden lying in wait for Secret Service agents, Love It or Leave It's April tour dates are just around the corner. We'll be at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival in Austin, Texas on April 21st with the delightful Joyce Nicole Johnson, Zach Zucker, the Sklar Brothers, and Tim Miller. So to get your tickets, head to crooked.com/events. That is our show. Thank you so much to Paula Poundstone, Hari Kondabolu, and James III. There are 205 days until the 2024 elections. Have a great night and have a great weekend. Thanks for coming out, everybody. Love It or Leave It is a Crooked Media production. It is written and produced by me, John Lovett, and Lee Eisenberg. Kendra James is our executive producer. Chris Lord is our producer. And Kennedy Hill is our associate producer. Hallie Kiefer is our head writer. Sarah Lazarus and Jocelyn Kaufman, Peter Miller, Alan Pierre, Will Miles, and Mohamed El-Sheikhi are our writers. Evan Sutton is our editor. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis provide audio support. Stephen Colon is our audio engineer. And Milo Kim is our videographer. Our theme song is written and performed by Sure Sure. Thanks to our designer, Bernardo Serna, for creating and running all of our visuals, which you can't see because this is a podcast. And to our digital producers, David Tolles, Claudia Shang, Mia Kelman, and Matt DeGroat, for filming and editing video each week so you can. It's Love It or Leave It.